circulate on a particular mix of odd and inspiring news headlines in Wendy's Coffee House. Newsmakers with a penchant for the unknown, unexplained, and unusual share their experiences with UFOs, ghost encounters, near-death experiences, and more for your own unique blend of Wendy's Coffee House Curious. And now, here's Wendy.
Just diving right into summer, because apparently spring was bored and said, okay, see you, bye. Incredible, the weather this year. Hopefully, wherever you are, it's calming enough that you can keep your head above water. A lot of stuff going on this summer. I wanted to real quickly address a few travel hotspots, just in case you haven't planned your summer vacation, because there are some unusual offbeat summer possibilities, and they include the paranormal. One of them, you could actually go to on a big Sasquatch hunt, Bigfoot, Sasquatch, whatever, with Christopher Noel. And this is in July, the 17th through 18th. I put these things on the blog just in case you're interested. The camp out with UFOs in Colorado. If you haven't been to the Colorado Watchtower, this is one to go to. And it's, you're wide out in the open looking at all the stars and hoping for some blinking lights. There's more to it than that, but that's just the upshot. You could also stay in one of the top 10 most haunted places on Earth, according to the Time magazine review. The Queen Mary. They didn't used to let you stay in this room. Room B340 is open for business. And apparently sleep is like an anomaly. It's known for all sorts of quirky things happening. And the other thing, too, is you can go to the Board Camp Crystal Mine. A lot of stuff going on down around there. And until I went there, I had no idea they were referring to Sasquatch stuff. But when we went and saw the log in the tree, about 12 feet, 19 feet up from the ground, this log, maybe a foot and a half or so in diameter, it was just perched in the branches, and it happened overnight. So that would let you know something's happening, and it's incredible. In the meantime, you can also go check out some crystals. And the other thing, the UFO tours. You can do that, UFO and vortex tours in Sedona. Okay, so there you go. A few things. I put them on the Wendy's Coffee House blog to check it out. Now, if you are interested in paranormal and you have not read one of the 40 or so books that Nick Redfern has put out, you're missing something. Okay, because he's prolific. He can't help himself. It just hits him, and he can't stop until he's done writing. And while he's writing, he gets stories from people talking about other things. And so after he wrote, the one I like is the 365 Days of UFOs, because there's always something. Every single day, something happens. But he did the Roswell UFO conspiracy, and he's talked about the men in black, women in black, all sorts of stuff. And this time, this is like a compilation from the other book that inspired, as he was doing the Men in Black book, these stories came out, including black-eyed children, women in black, the whole nine yards. And Nick, I am so glad you cannot help yourself and you keep writing, okay? It's a curse with you, isn't it?
Enjoy doing it, and there's not much else I can really do. I can do two things. I can write books, and I can drive a forklift, and I've done both.
A forklift?
Over the years, so.
Whoa!
So it's one or the other for the stretch, you know. So.
Okay, well, yeah, you've got a backup, a plan B, in case the writing ever fails. This is a little, it's intimidating. If you haven't had a men in black, women in black, black-eyed children experience, you start out at the beginning of the book saying, this one kind of got to you. Is that kind of warning people before they dare to read this that there could be some funky things happening?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is where it gets into really sort of controversial areas, Wendy. I mean, I've written sort of five books on the overall Men in Black style mysteries. And for people who aren't aware and think, you know, the Men in Black are just, you know, Will Smith and Tommy Lee Jones, it's not like that at all. You know, in the movies, they're from these, you know, government agencies and et cetera, et cetera. But the reality is that the real Men in Black mystery is far more sort of supernatural and paranormal based. It's just Hollywood turned into sort of secret agents. And one of the things I found that happened occasionally over the years was that when I was writing and researching about the Men in Black, strange things would happen, like weird synchronicities and strange paranormal phenomena would happen occasionally. But in 2014, I was writing my book Men in Black. Then in 2015, I was writing the book Women in Black. And it was in this particular time frame, and went into 2016 and 2017 as well, that I started to get a lot of really strange things going on, quite disturbing, supernatural activity. And so did a number of other people that I interviewed. And I found this got really weird. I would interview people, and they would then start to have weird things happen to them, or they would be reading about the Men in Black, and strange things would happen. So it's sort of, the book's sort of a, it's written in, it's called The Black Diary because it's sort of written in a day-by-day style, you know, with all the dates of when everything happened. But it's sort of like a cautionary story of what can happen when you do sort of immerse yourself into this supernatural world of the Men in Black.
And I don't know, I think it might be because I've had my own synchronistic things happen once I start, if I'm going to do an interview with somebody about a certain topic, then those kinds of events will all of a sudden seem like they stand out, or I'll have an encounter, I'll have something that correlates. And that, to me, this, because it is so odd, so unusual, so completely anti what we're used to, is I think it just it's more of like a big exclamation point, and it stands out, so you remember it. And some of the stuff you talk about in here, like at one point you're doing a certain subject, and Lisa Hagen, your agent, is on the line, and she has the same, the words come to her out of the blue. You remember which one that was?
Well, yeah, this is a weird story, and because, you know, telephone interference and weird noises and voices on the phone are very typical in Men in Black cases, and they don't sound, again, like government-type situations. It's more almost like a paranormal entity, literally sort of getting into the lines. And this related to a story back in 1986. I'm sure most people who were alive then will remember when there was the tragic explosion of the Challenger space shuttle on takeoff, killing all the crew. Now, the FBI launched a big investigation in the wake of the event to try and figure out, was it just an accident, was it sabotage, etc. And I mentioned this in the book because I was talking to Lisa about this, and she then just shortly after talking to her, she had this weird phone call where the phone rang out, and there was just this creepy voice that said Challenger exploded, and then put the phone down, as if somebody was letting me know and letting Lisa know that somebody was basically listening in on our conversations. And and it was, you know, it was a weird and kind of sinister period. You know, sinister is probably the right word. You know, we were talking about the whole space shuttle thing. I was planning on talking about it at a upcoming UFO event. And then suddenly Lisa gets this creepy phone call, and it, you know, it did disturb Lisa. She was like, "Whoa, you know, what's all this about?" And it was just a very strange time, you know.
I want to get, there's another aspect. I'm not sure if you're aware of this. The guy named they called him the PK Man, Ted Owens. He also said, he gave a warning and said the Challenger was going to explode. He told Jeffrey Mishlove, who had been assigned to work with him, I guess the remote viewing guy, said he was just a little too overt about his stuff. And he said that his space intelligences were going to, they were going to shoot it down. He said, you can't, they can't go up because it's going to have an accident. And of course, Jeffrey's like, yeah, right, I can't say anything about this. But he does document that and say he got the information saying it was going to be a tragic event. And I thought, well, that's interesting because her stuff is also kind of that channeled ETs type premonitions. She's a psychic, and she's trying to get people to listen to her theory, which I hadn't heard from anybody else. And you said like 12 pages of that still is unavailable. And that's a fascinating angle that she presents, too, that kind of goes in with there's something else involved in this, especially when it's messing with your phone lines. Does that make sense?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. And sometimes there is this sort of blurring of the lines. Is some of it government stuff, and is some of it this more paranormal stuff? And I think that is the case. I think, you know, that at times a lot of people in ufology have been watched by government agencies. But there's also this, the more supernatural side as well. And sometimes, as I said, the lines get blurred. But there's no doubt that for the most part, you know, the Men in Black phenomenon is clearly not, you know, people from the Pentagon. We're talking about the real Men in Black. They're sort of pale and skinny. They sort of look cadaverous almost, and can mind control people and hypnotize them. And even people who claim that when they've been in the presence of the Men in Black, within hours or days, they've fallen sick, as if they've been almost, if you like, supernaturally infected in a strange way.
Hold on a second. We're going to take a break here. I'm going to come back. Again, my guest is Nick Redfern, author of the latest, The Black Diary, Men in Black, Women in Black, Black-Eyed Children, and Dangerous Books. Okay, we're going to come back and talk more about... There's another case in here that involves a MUFON investigator who totally cold turkey quit because of the things that were going on in his life. It's Wendy's Coffee House on KCMO Talk Radio. Wendy's Coffee House, KCMO Talk Radio. Thanks for tuning in. If you miss anything, I do put the links on the blog, okay? My guest, Nick Redfern, I love talking with Nick because he writes about everything. There's so many topics that he likes, and he has a darn spooky life. So if you're in any way, shape, or form attracted, be careful. Because Nick goes where spooky things follow, all right? And especially reading the opening of your book and these stories that, you know, when you talk about getting involved with this stuff and the funky things that happen, what about the lightning?
Oh, well, that's one of the weirdest aspects of the story, and I've heard this from other people as well. Again, when I was doing at the height of the research into the Men in Black mystery, over the course of about 4 days, I had a really weird series of events happened. It began, which some people might think is just like a regular thing that sometimes happened. On a Saturday night, my air conditioner went out, and then... that was a Saturday night, so Sunday was miserable, you know, with all the heat. Monday, we had a huge storm here, gigantic storm, and I'd gone down to the mailbox to get the mail and raced up the steps because it was just pouring down with rain. I just barely got in the door, slammed the door, and I was probably 6-7 feet into the room when the door and the outside of the apartment was struck by lightning. There was like this burning metal smell, and all my AT&T equipment was fried, my landline, everything was gone. And had I been, you know, just a few seconds early, I would have been exactly where the lightning hit. Now, coincidentally or not, the next day my cell phone stopped working for about 6 hours, and then inexplicably came back on. And then the day after that, I was going down to the mailbox again on what was a nice sunny day. And I got attacked by a blackbird. And I think it was a blackbird.
Yeah.
And I was like, geez, you know, it was just one thing after another, things that you wouldn't imagine, you know, could occur in just such a short time frame. Mm-hmm. But what was even weirder, a good friend of mine, Buffy Clary, who lives in East Texas, I loaned her a book about paranormal entities when she was over here for a weekend, and she took it back with her. And shortly afterwards, when I was almost struck by lightning, when she was reading the book, her apartment was struck by lightning and as well, which is kind of really strange. And on top of that, she actually had a second lightning strike about a year or so later when she was in her backyard just sitting, you know, hanging out. And there was a lightning strike and it hit the tree in her yard. And it was so close to her that she went to the hospital because she was, like, tingling and just didn't feel well. Wow. And all of this happened to her whenever she was delving into sort of, you know, paranormal entities and things like that.
Just a little bit of you really want to go down this road.
Yeah.
Just to give you a little hint. Well, the other thing, before we went into the break, I talked about the guy who was a former MUFON investigator, and he stopped because it was just getting too creepy for him.
Yeah, well, this is an interesting story from a guy named Brian in Texas, who I interviewed a couple of years ago for the book. And like a lot of people, you know, he got involved in the UFO subject because it was interesting to him. And he got involved, you know, with a group and doing research, that kind of thing. And as it is for a lot of people, it was just, you know, fun, exciting, and, you know, learning new material. And it went on like that for a while. But then strange things started to happen. He would hear sort of like weird noises and sounds in the home. And there was sort of a sense of paranoia sort of overwhelmed him, and, you know, like a dark shadow sort of fell on the home. And then he found himself sort of sleeping in weird places. He would wake up and find himself sleeping somewhere that, you know, clearly wasn't where when he went to bed, you know. And he had no clue how that happened at all. And again, he, like some of the people who've been affected by this, he fell sick on a number of occasions and saw this as being connected, if you like. And then he had an experience with the Men in Black. And again, they were not, you know, sort of the Tommy Lee Jones, Will Smith type. They were sort of very, very, very creepy and weird looking. And he saw them almost in like an altered state when he was, you know, quite ill. And again, it was almost like a warning, you know, stay away from this. And for the most part, he did, and he got quite disturbed, primarily because he thought he was just getting into something like, you know, nuts and bolts, UFOs, aliens coming here from this star system to here. And then he found himself plunged into this weird world of sort of paranoia, crossing over into almost like into the world of the occult, you know, rather than science. And that wasn't what he was expecting. And he really did sort of, you know, back away from the whole thing, and because he was not prepared for it, you know.
Well, and I think that's part of this, the theme that I've spoken with people who are investigators and do research for MUFON, and they say, you know, that's what they were expecting, you know, go out and have a sighting and see something real and bring back maybe a souvenir medal. There's some locked up somewhere in a safe in the Smithsonian, probably, you know, vault anyway. Mm-hmm. But then they find out there's a paranormal element, and people who have these experiences also have paranormal activity in their houses and in their lives that is completely and totally discombobulating, or at least, you know, intimidating. If you haven't ever had that happen, you don't know if you want to get close to it. And that's what a lot of these stories seem to echo, is that, like when one of the people you talked about in that same story, that feeling of there's an illness or a nausea or a sense that they're close by. And so that's better than a premonition. This is a physical element that gives you a clue. And that's frightening.
Yeah, you're right. And I think it's always good, you know, in those situations to go with that gut instinct. If you feel things are wrong, or there's, you know, a dark atmosphere in the home, that kind of thing, which people can sense, you know, I think you need to take steps to sort of put a, you know, like a psychic barrier up to prevent this hopefully from happening. But the problem is, a lot of people who get into it just into mainstream ufology and think that's what they're dealing with, they may not have very much knowledge of the world of the paranormal and the occult. So they're, you know, ironically, the skills that are required very often to investigate some of these things are not, you know, what the regular tools that people might think ufologists use, telescopes, you know, night scopes, whatever. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it can be sort of rituals and cleansings, you know, to
sage.
To try and prevent, you know, this sort of impacting further and further on you.
Yeah, psychic self-defense. Hang on a second.
Yeah.
We're going to take a break. The other thing about this is that it isn't just while you're wide awake. It's when you're asleep. And there are people who've had, I've had that Men in Black encounter when I was asleep. I told you that before. It's been a while.
Yeah.
But I want to bring that back into the equation to give people the broad scope of these kinds of events. It's that's why it is so fascinating, And in some ways, difficult to explain. The Black Diary is Nick Redfern's latest book, coming out June 5th. It's so hot off the press, and you can get it on Amazon again, about men in black, women in black, the whole nine yards. We haven't gotten into the children or the other people. There's a guy who's like a psychic who does a reading, and that's in there too. Oh, just so much stuff, but we're coming back with the dream stuff. Again, Nick Redfern, KCMO Talk Radio. It's Wendy's Coffee House. KCMO Talk Radio. It's Wendy's Coffee House. With the strange and unusual, feel right at home. My guest, Nick Redfern, author of The Black Diary, the latest installment concerning all sorts of people, beings, entities in black. I wanted to touch on the dream aspect, because that, I think, people aren't prepared for this to also. You think if you go to bed, you can get a good night's sleep and you're safe and all the world just goes away. But this also enters into the dream state. And you share that as well. Can I share my story with you on that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
This is something. A whole lot of things were in my life in a state of chaos. A lot of transition, a lot of change, a lot of decisions. And I dreamed. I was out in the middle of a field looking up at the stars. And there was a guy I was looking at. He was with his friends wearing cowboy boots, and they were all kind of chatting, but it was a rough, kind of a coarse conversation. And I was like, you know, I don't really want to be here. And I see this black car driving up through the field. It's like a big, long black car. I'm not a car person. I don't know what to call it. Okay. Some people say a Cadillac, you know that. But it was a long black, no really visible design that I could see, you know, the little insignia. But these three guys get out. They're all dressed in black, and they're all kind of, you know, a white looking. I don't know if they were Caucasian, because that wasn't what stood out. It was the fact that there were three of them, and I didn't discern any specific facial features. One did the talking. The other two just kind of stood back, and it felt very intense. And I was told by the one, he looked at me, and it's like they had a mission, and the direct contact there said, "We need you to start doing what you agreed to do when you came here." And in the dream, I knew that meant I had to do a radical about shift and, you know, cut the things that I was doing and change direction. Now, I can't say what it was. I just know that at that point I did make some shifts in my life, but I felt like I didn't, that there was a reason, and if I didn't listen to it, then it wouldn't be in my best interest. So there was that intimidation. I wasn't afraid. I just knew, okay, this is important and I have to do it. That, in some way, shape, or form, could even be programming, because that was an influential thing that came to me from these men in black in the dream. Does that resonate with the stuff that you're getting from some of these people?
Oh, yeah. I've got 5 or 6 cases in the book where people had encounters with the men in black, but it was not in sort of the waking state. It was in the dream state. But they were very graphic, realistic dreams. Didn't come, you know, we all occasionally have a dream that doesn't seem just like a dream, you know.
Yeah.
But in these cases, it was almost like being in a virtual reality world for the people. That's how graphically real it seemed. And in many of these cases, people were given sort of warnings and threats to stay away from this or not to do that. And I've spoken to, although I've got 5 or 6 in the book, you know, I've got a lot more stories, you know, where people didn't want the story told, you know, and if they don't want the story told, obviously I don't use it. But I have a lot more as well, where clearly this dream angle of the Men in Black mysteries is very much sort of a misunderstood or even not even known aspect of the phenomenon to most people. But what I do genuinely believe is that these entities, if they are sort of multidimensional supernatural things rather than, you know, physical flesh and blood as we understand it, I think there's enough witness testimony to suggest that these things can literally sort of invade our dream state and manipulate it. And I mean, I do mean that literally, you know, but get into your dream and become a part of it.
Now, some of the stuff you get into is kind of darker, and I think that's the paranormal element, where people feel that even though they have disconnected from whatever book they were reading, I think you mentioned one by Rosemary Ellen Guiley, is that? and she writes about the gin. Is that that?
Yeah, well, it was actually Rosemary's book that I loaned to Buffy Clary, and I, when I gave her the book, that was when she had the lightning strike, and I think actually over time she just put the book to one side, and she still has it, and. I'm happy that I don't have it.
You're like, okay,
really,
good riddance.
I mean, I've had this happen so many times where, you know, particularly with the MIB and things like that, that, you know, you start talking about them and investigating it, and it almost is like an alarm bell goes off with them, and they realize. And that's when, you know, the problems start. I mean, I had, again, at the height of all this research, I had a really weird situation when I was dreaming, and then I sort of semi-woke up, I guess, from a dream. And I just had this sense that there was something hostile in the hallway between the bedroom and the living room. And I was not asleep when this happened, and mm-hmm. I know for sure. And I heard this sort of... It was a female voice, but it was a very deep female voice. And I cannot tell the exact words. And she or it, whatever it was, said, "I can help you, just say yes." Mm-hmm. And I felt that if I said yes, I was sort of like opening myself up to some sort of supernatural pact, you know what I mean? Where I would be just... I'd be caught in it, and it's like selling your soul, that kind of thing. That's how it felt. I just knew that if I said yes, bad things were going to happen. So I just focused on trying to push it away, you know. And I think it worked, but the other things did happen. So I think it was like a case of ongoing things. But that was like one of those pivotal moments, you know, where you could go from one way to another, you know.
Well, and they don't give you a contract where you can read the fine print up front.
Yeah.
It's like you're already in it. Good luck.
But it is kind of like that. It is sort of, you know, you sort of give your permission to something.
Yeah.
And then it gets its claws into you.
Yeah, it's easier to get in and out. And you also say there's part of this where you're kind of joking about burn the book after you're done because of, you know, because, okay, this stuff is contagious.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm only sort of really part joking when I say that because David Weatherly, for example, who wrote the Black Eyed Children book, he shared with me a number of cases where, and there are a lot of parallels between the Men in Black and the Black Eyed Children, but David shared with me several stories for the book where people who've been reading his book, you know, sitting in bed reading it at night, they started to get weird phone calls, or, you know, the phone would just ring in the middle of the night and there'd be nobody there. Electrical equipment would start to blow in the homes. And that happened to four or five of the people who read David's book. And it also happened with, there was a guy named Albert Bender, who was one of the early people in the MIB phenomenon in the 1950s. In 1962, he wrote a book called Flying Saucers and the Three Men. And the same thing happened there. A lot of people who read Albert Bender's book were also sort of infected by the Men in Black and started to experience bad things in the home. And one of the people who read the book and experienced all this was a woman who wrote to the publisher, a guy named Gray Barker, and she said that she was going to burn the book because she felt there was something dangerous and like malignant almost about it. And that was in the 60s, you know, and now we're talking about the 2000s. And it's still happening, you know, with my book and with David Weatherly's. It's almost like reading about this does set off, like I said, alarm bells somewhere, and then they turn the tables on you.
Hold on a second here. We're going to come back. Yeah, there's some that when they read the book, somebody dies. Let's get into that one. Yeah, it's real cheery stuff, but there's more than that, all right? Stick around. The Black Diary with Nick Redfern on Wendy's Coffee House. Gonna be some sweet sounds coming down. KCMO Talk Radio, it's Wendy's Coffee House. My guest, Nick Redfern, and he does tremendous work researching all of these subjects. Men in Black and Women in Black, Black Eyed Children, all these things are just basically part of his neighborhood, all right? He knows them quite well. And The Black Diary comes out here in June. So if you haven't had a chance to read any of the books, start with that one and then go from there. Like potato chips, you'll get hooked. The other thing that we mentioned just before the break was, you know, some of this can seem a little bit over the top and like you're exaggerating. But when you hear the stories, there are some where people have read about some of this subject matter and then somebody close to them dies. Okay, not to frighten you if you're listening, but this is somebody else's story, so you can kind of remove yourself a little bit. Is that right, Nick?
Well, yeah, and fortunately, there aren't many cases like that, but there are a few of them. And you know, with the black-eyed kids, people get, you know, run-ins of bad luck. And one of the people I interviewed about this very issue was a friend of mine, Tracy Austin, who lives in Las Vegas. And she started to research, because she has a TV show out there, and she started to research the whole black-eyed children phenomenon and also how it sort of plugged into the Men in Black mystery as well. And, excuse me, and she talked about a case where a friend of hers had seen not just like a black-eyed child, but a black-eyed woman as well. Which you don't hear too much about that. You mm-hmm. know, we think of the black-eyed children with these totally solid black eyes, but there are a few reports as well as adults appearing to look like well, adults.
And there was one.
With solid black eyes as well.
I was going to say.
And she had a very weird experience with this very kind of weird and creepy woman in black. And then very shortly afterwards, both her parents died. And this very much played on the mind of Tracy's friend, and Tracy's friend actually felt that somehow there was a connection, that almost like a curse, if you like. And there are a few cases like that, which you know are very disturbing when you sort of put that angle of the black-eyed children and black-eyed women dressed in black, and then suddenly people die.
Yeah,
you know, that's. It is disturbing.
It's like a premonition. Oh, I wonder. Yeah. We're going to run out of time. There has to be a showstopper. Something in here that got to you. Was there a story like that?
Well, yeah. I mean, one of the people who very generously prepared a big paper for the book was a woman named Susan Shepherd, who lives literally on the fringes of where the whole Mothman phenomenon went down in the 60s. Mm. And she's an expert on that whole field. And she's had a lot of experience researching one of the lesser-known sort of spin-offs of the Men in Black, a character called the Grinning Man. People see this sort of creepy man in black, but with this dangerous sort of psychotic grin on his face. And she has done a lot of research on that and told a really, really sort of creepy and dark story of almost being stalked by this strange character with this evil grin. And it sounds like something out of a horror story until you realize, you know, this is a first-person account of someone who was sort of plunged into this world of this spin-off character, the Grinning Man.
Well, did you have people who warned you not to go with this topic, to keep, you know, to kind of just back off a little bit?
Well, yeah, but the problem is I never listen, you know.
That lightning strike wasn't good enough, right?
Yeah, I mean, joking aside, yeah, the way I look at it is that, yes, it can be hazardous, but on the other hand, if you don't go looking all the way, you're not going to get all the answers. So it's kind of a catch-22. You want the answers, and you know there are ways to do it, but should you do it? And some people perhaps do back away. Other people like me don't back away. And if you don't back away, sometimes you pay the price with all this sort of weird stuff, like the lightning strikes and then friends getting hit by lightning and just things like that. You know, you just have to be prepared for it, I think.
Well, and see, some of this, like when you're reading some of the overviews of these, there's one in here where there was an encounter and the thing said, you have 9 more years. And then that was it. What is that about?
Yeah. Yeah, that was a guy named Darrell Collins, who actually lives not too far from me in Dallas, Texas. And He'd had a lifelong experiences of abductions and things like that, so he clearly had, you know, background in the UFO phenomenon. But he had sort of a bit of an obsession with the Men in Black mystery, and he still does. And I've interviewed Daryl a few times, and he told me how in 1986, I think he was in his driveway or a parking lot, and this black car came along with this woman in a black suit, driving the car, looking pale, and she said, "You have 9 years left," and then screeched it off and was gone. And by Daryl's own admission, he said that kind of haunted him for years. And he actually noted the date. And when he came around, like 9 years later, he said there were like these weird odors in the house, like something had died in there, that kind of thing. And he felt that there'd been some presence on that day in the house 9 years after this warning.
Wow. Yeah, and I think you said 1995 for that one. That's the thing. These stories are all unique. They're not cookie cutter. They're not uniform.
No.
But they have an aspect that says there's something that they need to be taken seriously, in my opinion.
Yeah, and the, you know, one of the important things is that almost everybody I interviewed was willing to go on out, you know, under their own name. Sometimes, you know, people don't want the names used, which I understand. But for the most part, everybody in the book is named, and, you know, and other people, they're fine, you know, with other people contacting them as well. So,
well, and you had some experiences. You talk about working with the different publishers, and one with Patrick Huey, I think, Anomalous Books, where this manuscript disappears.
Oh, yeah, that was another strange thing. That was way back in about 2004, something like that. I was writing a book on Roswell, and the Word manuscript back then, you know, they didn't want it sent electronically. They wanted the old-fashioned paper,
physical.
And the manuscript literally vanished overnight from the offices of Simon & Schuster, and it was not seen again, and I had to print out another one for them. That was really bizarre, and Lisa, my agent, working in the literary world, she's had a lot of weird stuff. One occasion, a black car pulled up outside a house, and somebody photographed the house. And as she was standing in the kitchen window, and this is like another aspect of the Men in Black. They call them the phantom photographers, mm-hmm. where you have these MIB types that get out of these old cars and take a picture of the home of someone who's involved in ufology, and then they shoot off again.
I had that stuff going on in 2009. People would walk by on their cell phones, and cars would pull up randomly and park down the block, and my husband's like, what's going on? This, we're not imagining this. What is it about? And then it just stopped. But there, for 3 or 4 months, there were these really odd things happening, and you felt like something was in your home, but there was nothing that you could see. Things did get moved, and you would hear sounds. So the paranormal stuff, I can vouch for. This is part of my experience, too. But that stuff, it just makes you curious about, okay, so if this happens for me, it isn't impossible. It must be happening for other people, too. So, Nick, the book's coming out. What's your next project? Because I know you're working on one.
Well, at the very end of the year, I've got two books coming out later this year. At the very end of the year, I've got a book coming out on Area 51, like a full-length history of Area 51. But then in September, I've got a book coming out called Paranormal Parasites, which is all about supernatural entities that feed on us, you know, hungry ghosts, you know, psychic vampires, which can sort of bleed us, drive our energy, you know, that kind of thing.
Just when you thought it couldn't get any darker, Nick takes a dive. Okie doke. Hey, you. Thank you. I appreciate your time. And if you're listening and you want the book, The Black Diary, Nick Redfern, you can also check out his blog because he keeps everything up. He's prolific. Again, the blog is Nick Redfern for TN Blogspot. Nick, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Wendy.
All right. And if you're curious, just check out the links. I've got to put them up on Wendy's Coffee House and also list the former, previous, and current upcoming shows. How's that? Did I say it? See ya. Stay curious.